friends, another week of From the Point podcast. I am your co-host, Andy Sashu, and with me as always is...
Jim Malloy.
Let's get to some NHL action from around the league. All right, well, I guess we should probably start with some dramatic music like... The Flames have officially clinched a playoff spot, the second team in the NHL to do so this year. That is pretty damn exciting. Not unexpected, obviously. The top team in the West, so it was bound to happen eventually, but very exciting that it happened on Sunday. I mean, it was kind of out of their hands because it was based on another team's loss, but still, they're in.
It's a new experience for me. I don't remember this happening, actually.
Like, they clinch this far out kind of thing?
Definitely not the second team in the league to clinch.
No.
Not since I can remember.
That's amazing and super exciting. So let's look back at the Flames week. It was quite a good week for the team. We start with the New Jersey Devil game, which was a bit interesting. The Devils basically have an AHL lineup playing in the NHL right now because they have so many injuries to so many of their top guys. And I don't know what it was, but it almost seemed like the Flames just weren't engaged in the game for the first 40 minutes or so. I mean, the Devils had the lead at multiple times.
Yeah.
And at one point...
Kenny Agostino.
Yeah, exactly,
split
right?
Split the D, top corner.
And scored... Was it early in the third or late in the second? I can't remember. But they took a 4-3 lead and you're just like... Is this seriously going to happen? This is after the Flames tie at 3-3.
Yeah, was that the Zajac shot?
Yeah.
I think it was Zajac.
Shorthanded goal?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then all of a sudden, the Flames just absolutely turn it on. And they basically go like Super Saiyan, would be a good way to put it, and score 6 unanswered goals in the third and win the game 9-4. And as we called, the good game that Johnny Gaudreau had at home against the Vegas Golden Knights turned into something against the New Jersey Devils that night.
Right. So we went from, what, 9 shots on goal, 8 shots on goal against Vegas to 6 points.
Hat trick and 3 assists.
Oh, it was awesome. The way he did it was great, too.
Some really nice goals.
Yeah.
Really nice goals.
Really looked confident. The shootout goal was just a huge relief because it just has felt for a while like penalty shots were not his strength. And it was an important goal. Like it really was. It ended up being the game winner, I think.
Right. Yeah. Yes, you're correct. Because Derek Ryan tied the game on that weird.
Yeah, the weird one hopper.
I'm sure Don Cherry just ripped some dude for Hockey Night in Canada, basically sticking his stick out in front of the goalie.
Yeah, that was on the back check.
Oh.
So I was just so excited. It was really fun to watch. And Gaudreau, I think last week I was commenting that he wasn't doing things that were overly creative or magical out there. And I think, he turned that around pretty quick.
Yeah, big time.
Like even that assist at the end to Monahan, where he went in, he cut back, he did a.
And then the whole team leaves Monahan wide open at the side of the net. Like he was single-handedly helping his other teammates that were on slides get off of them in the same game. It was a great, great performance.
Well, speaking of Monahan, we were talking about him last week.
Right.
A lot of people weren't very happy with him, including us, and. He made some incredible passes. I mean, he was doing those like 2-3 foot saucer passes that are really tough to do.
Yeah.
And just finding Gaudreau perfectly. So really good to see there. Lindholm, I was actually a little surprised that they didn't challenge the Lindholm goal because I thought he knocked over the goalie.
Yeah, I was a little curious about that one too. I think we thought they were going to challenge it, but maybe just because it was so scrambly in front of the net. I don't know. I don't know what the ruling would have been.
Yeah. So the whole thing worked out and then the Flames, they're back to winning, back to putting up big offensive numbers, really cool. And that led into the game against the New York Rangers.
Right. And this is another game they had to have. It's a weak opponent. San Jose's right on their tails. And so you got to think a guy like Matthew Tkachuk, who puts up a hat trick Sunday against the Vegas Golden Knights and still has a good game against the Devils, admittedly so, sees what Johnny Gaudreau does and says, you know what, I'm going to try and do the same damn thing. And he ends up having himself a 5-point night, 2 goals and 3 assists and some absolutely beautiful plays, including the assist on Johnny Gaudreau's opening goal.
Oh,
like flips the puck halfway down the rink.
It was gorgeous. It was reminiscent of the Carlson pass to Hoffman in the playoffs a few years ago. Yeah. Like, it was just perfect. It was a perfect play.
Yeah.
And it was cool too, because you saw him look up and you saw Gaudreau take off. So it's like you could see the beginnings of something incredible happening right there. And yeah. Gaudreau just burned that guy. The defenseman was so desperate to try to catch up. He didn't look to see what was actually happening. And I mean, the puck landed perfect. And then Gaudreau, like, this is how good the pass was. Gaudreau made an awesome move. Like, he deked the goalie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and buried it. And it was a beautiful goal. But I only think of the pass. Yeah. I think of the play. Like, it was just it was a really cool play.
Yeah. That this was a game the Flames, well, it was, like, never in doubt. They absolutely controlled the entirety of the play. New York had a decent pushback in the second, but absolutely nothing to show for it. Thought the Flames looked great all night. I thought Michael Frolik scored a really, really nice goal in that game too. Kind of showed off a little bit of skill. Like, it's good to see the 3M line continue to contribute and stuff like that. The only really notable thing about this game is Sean Monahan goes in and plays the first period and then sort of disappears for the rest of the game. Now, afterwards, head coach Bill Peters said that he was dealing with a flu that's been going around the team, and that he wouldn't travel to Winnipeg, which he didn't the next night. And he was back on the ice at practice on Monday, so hopefully that whole thing's over. I know they were trying to contain the flu because Mike Smith was actually supposed to start in the Rangers game and couldn't because he'd had the flu on the Thursday. He was healthy enough to back up, but they didn't feel he was strong enough to start that game. So hopefully he's okay. It's not something worse.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I don't know if we have a good reason to doubt. Like, you would think right. That if it wasn't a flu, you'd think he would have traveled with the team.
Or they would have just said, well, I mean, it was a one-off, so I can understand why.
Yeah, maybe not.
Yeah. But you'd think they would have at least said upper or lower body or whatever, right?
Yeah. I believe that they did say Monahan's a maybe for tomorrow.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess we'll see what happens.
I guess it all depends too. Yeah. Well, stuff like that's tough, right? Because depending on what kind of fluid it is, if you lose a ton of fluids, and these are like high level athletes, people need to remember, right? If he gets it worse than Smith had it, and he needs to, like, rehydrate and get back to, like, 100%. Yeah, I mean, does it really make sense to push him when you've already clinched a playoff spot? Things are going well. Like, it's a good time to sit him, at least, if he's not 100%, right?
You would think that it would be a good time to sit, but they are just neck and neck with San Jose.
So now we move into the Winnipeg game, which was on the Saturday. Monahan didn't travel with the team. Sam Bennett ended up being kind of a late scratch, mid-afternoon scratch, I guess you'd say. So the team went with 11 forwards and 70, and I thought they still put in a pretty damn good effort. Michael Stone got back into the lineup, first time he's played since November 11th, which is awesome to see. I mean, the blood clot issue is a very, very serious one, can create insane health things if not properly treated, and heart attacks, anything kind of related to that, right? So it's a good thing
that sounds big.
Yeah, it's a good thing that they treated it the way they did and took care of it the way they did. Tough travel. I mean, the team flies 2 hours to Winnipeg, loses an hour, doesn't check in the hotel till like 3:30 in the morning, and then they get screwed because they ended up playing the earlier Hockey Night in Canada game, which is 6 Winnipeg time, 5 Calgary time, basically play 2 games in 24 hours. That's insane. And they still put in a damn good effort.
Yeah, and it's just a continuation of a very tough travel month for, for the team.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you got to give them credit. I thought that they were right in the mix of that game the entire time. And, like, given they were missing Monahan.
Yep.
They were going with an odd lineup, having 7D. They gave up a late goal in the last 10 seconds of the first period.
And right.
I thought they battled back really well. They got that beautiful shorthanded goal on a nice passing play with Lindholm to Gio, back to Lindholm to Jankowski in front.
Yep.
Jankowski, ties again for the league lead in shorthanded goals, I think.
Oh.
And overall, I mean, I think they dominated the third period.
Yes, big time.
There were some players with like over 90% Corsi in that game. Like Derek Ryan, I think, was one, and, and Lindholm. So, I mean, pretty good pinch hitting by Ryan on the top line there, but they couldn't quite get it done. against a very good Winnipeg team. I just think that it's one of those games where like everything was kind of lined up against them and they gave it great effort, but came up a little short.
Now, I understand Winnipeg's hurt as well, but I mean, that kind of almost evens the playing field in its own way, right? We're down a couple forwards, they're down a couple D, have you. I was not impressed with them whatsoever, considering they're the home team and everything. I mean, I know they've been under 500 basically since the All-Star break, or around 500. I didn't like the way they looked at all in that game. And I remember you saying earlier in the season when teams were really ragging on the Flames and how well they played at the start of the season, and then comparing to the Jets and saying, well, we beat a lot of the top teams and the Jets haven't been able to do that. You're kind of seeing it now, you know, like I just wasn't impressed by them really at all.
Yeah. The league's tightened right up. And I mean, just looking at the Central Division right now, it's a little bit of a turtle race. Like, Winnipeg and Nashville, they're both 5-5 in their last 10. St. Louis is in third in that division, 4-4-2. I mean, it's not,
everyone seems like content to be where they are.
Yeah.
Just kind of like sitting, waiting for the next coasting thing to happen. The end, yeah. It's kind of weird. I wonder a little bit if Winnipeg's kind of bought into their own hype in a weird way, because everyone really expects them to do well this playoffs. And I mean, they should. They have an awesome team.
Yeah. Well, I mean, they got Ehlers back, but they are still missing Byfuglien, who is.
And Morrissey.
So, I mean, that's two top pair defenders, essentially. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe that's what's causing problems. I mean, it would make sense. Those are very good players. And I don't know, maybe they're just having a little bit more trouble breaking out of the dog days. They are a great home team, though. Just looking at their home record, 24-9-4. So you can see where they're getting
It's such a good barn. They have such good fans there.
So I don't know. I think that with the way it was lined up, the Flames put in real good game, could have won, just didn't go their way that time.
Yeah.
And still lots of reason for optimism. I mean, Calgary's got a very, very close race against San Jose. And I mean, I think they're just in this really cool spot where if like Tkachuk's line and Gaudreau's line are both scoring, they're a tough team to contain.
Oh yeah, big time. So looking ahead to the week, I mean, depending on Sean Monahan's health this week, the Flames have recalled Curtis Lazar. I guess we should mention that Alan Quine also got in for the Winnipeg game.
Oh, right, yeah.
And then it looks like James Neal should be returning sometime this week.
Yes, I saw I think they labeled him as possible for the Ottawa game.
On Thursday.
On Thursday.
So that's good. I mean, the Flames have another good week in terms of opponents. Columbus on Tuesday, which should be a well-fought game. It's probably the toughest game they have all week.
Yeah, and that's a desperate team as well.
So it's going to be a good challenge, that's for sure. Yeah. And then you have Ottawa coming on Thursday. That's a game you have to have. And then you play Vancouver in Vancouver on Saturday, and you at least have a day in between for travel. So can't use that really as an excuse. And hopefully, there have been so many games where they've taken it to Vancouver and just haven't been able to get that extra point this season.
Yeah, I would love to see them win this one.
Yeah, exactly, right? So things line up really well for the Flames going into this week, and hopefully that helps them stay ahead of the Sharks moving forward.
Yeah, here's that favorable schedule that everybody was talking about a little while ago. I mean, okay, so what do you foresee in the Columbus game? The last time they played Columbus, it was 9-6, awesome.
One of the best games of the year.
Yeah, 9-6. They were down 4-1 at one point, I think, and stormed back. And then Columbus came back, too, so that was an exciting one.
Well, Columbus has been playing a little bit better recently. They've won a couple games, but they've all been a lot tighter games. So I expect a tighter game overall. Like, this feels like a 3-1, 3-2 type game to me.
Well, you'd think so. I mean, Columbus, they're desperate. They've got really good defense. They've got a good goalie when he plays well.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a pretty dangerous team. I think most people thought that they would be in the playoffs at the start of the year.
Right. And they were in a good spot. Yeah. So, and then, like I said, Ottawa should be.
Ottawa's like half an AHL team, half a junior team right now. Not great. I mean, they got a minus 50 goal differential, which is actually amazingly not the worst in the league.
That is shocking.
Yeah. Detroit. Actually, Detroit isn't even the worst. LA is. Oh. Minus 59. Oof.
Yeah, LA is having a heck of a year, that's for sure.
And then Vancouver, I mean, Vancouver just, I think they're a dangerous team.
They are. And we've said it before, I think they're farther along than the Oilers, and that's very obvious in the games they played, even recently. They feel more like a 500 hockey team, though. They put in good efforts, but they're not going to win every night because they just don't have all of it together just yet.
Yeah, well, they're waiting for their star players to become more accustomed to the league.
Oh, totally.
And, I mean, just of note, they beat Chicago tonight in overtime. And, I mean, like, Chicago's a team, I mean, desperate. I think they're done. But
I think they are, too.
But they're, I mean, they're close enough that the team hasn't quit or anything. And if they won this one, they get within 4 points kind of thing. And, I mean, I just think that Vancouver's a dangerous team. So, as much as it's a favorable schedule, I think there's some good challenges in there with Columbus and Vancouver.
It'll be interesting to see if the Flames can really pull, like, say 5 points out of this week, if they and they start to kind of make a cushion again against San Jose or anything like that, if they start resting the odd guy going into the last 2 weeks of the season, just because they might have that luxury now that they've already clinched a playoff spot.
Well, that combined with the softer schedule,
it'll
be very interesting to see, and you gotta wonder how the team approaches it.
All right, taking a spin around the NHL, we'd be remiss to not open with talking about the Tampa Bay Lightning, just briefly, but on Monday night, they clinched the President's Trophy, so that's March 18th, they clinched the President's Trophy. That just feels unbelievably early, the fact that it's not even close for anyone else to catch them. Well, with two or three weeks left in the season, like, that's just insane.
Yeah, I mean, you just got to look at it. For most teams, there's still at least 20 points left on the table right now. And it doesn't matter if they go 10-0.
No, they can't get. Like, that's mind-boggling.
Yeah, it's just one of the most impressive performances. And, I mean, they're beating teams that are desperate, too. They've won 5 in a row. They're 8-2 in their last 10 games. Beat Arizona tonight, who, I mean, Arizona has been on a real impressive run, beating teams all over the place.
Yeah.
But they can't beat Tampa, so.
And another little shout-out to Steven Stamkos.
Oh, I saw that, yeah.
Yeah, he set the Lightning franchise record with, I believe, 384 goals, which is awesome. Awesome to see. I mean, he's there for a lot longer, so he was going to do it eventually, but cool that he gets it done in this season and he can just continue to move on and he makes that now the goalpost.
Yeah, he is a great player who played in a market where he didn't get maybe the exposure that other star players got. I mean, back when he was scoring like 60 goals, I think everybody sort of acknowledged him, but now, I mean, he's been kind of overtaken, the top player on the team. I mean, Braden Point, as far as I understand, is for the most part their number one center now.
Yep. And Kucherov, obviously.
I think Kucherov is the, I mean, Hart Trophy winner for me. I don't know. Where do you put Stamkos? Like, for me, Stamkos is kind of like, he kind of reminds me of like McKinnon a little bit.
Yeah.
Like, I think everybody just acknowledges that they're a top player. He's a little older, but
yeah,
I don't know if he's in that like Crosby. No, well, definitely not Crosby.
No, but yeah. See, and that's the thing with him, like, because he hasn't won anything big, unfortunately, because he's never played at the Olympics.
Terrible luck.
Yeah, terrible.
And
luck
also
on that
terrible
one.
Decision making.
Yeah, early on. And then he hasn't won a Stanley Cup yet or anything like that. So it's tough. It's tough with him, you know. And honestly, I feel like ever since he did break his leg, he's been a little bit slower and that kind of thing. So he's not quite the player he was. And the Crosby comparison is a good one because you think about how much Crosby means to his team overall and how much he does, like almost like a 200-foot player. Stamkos, to me, just doesn't feel like that type of player, right? He feels more like a dynamic forward with an amazing, like one of the best shots ever probably in terms of accuracy and basically just pure hardness, strength, or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Speed. But I mean, he's up there, but he's now in that part of his career where he does have to start winning things for people to consider him to be one of the better players of his generation.
Right. I think that's exactly it. So he's kind of a tough player to place because, I mean, he okay, so he's got 82 points right now. He's got 36 goals. I mean, he's having a hell of a season.
Yeah.
But it just, yeah, it doesn't quite feel like he's like a super elite player right now.
Yeah.
He's a very good player who's been a good player for a long time. Yeah, I find him a little bit tough to place, but now's not a very smart night to question him since he just took over the goal scoring lead for a franchise that's had some very good players. So
yeah.
Congratulations to him. And I mean, he's a player that I wouldn't mind seeing win something either.
Yeah, exactly.
I think he seems like he's been loyal to that franchise.
Oh, yeah. He could have left and he didn't. He stayed. So
yeah. And he's skilled as they come. So yeah, pretty cool.
So let's move on to two teams that are of interesting topic. First is our resident favorite, the Edmonton Oilers, who we've been very nice to and haven't really said anything about in the last couple weeks, mostly because there's nothing to really talk about with them, though. slightly. Okay, so Sunday night, the Oilers lose 6-3 to the Vegas Golden Knights.
Right.
And you got to think, that's got to be the death blow, right? Like, you lose to another team in your division. They are now, as of Monday night, 7 points out of a playoff spot, and with 10 games to go, and they have a rough schedule to finish out. They have St. Louis, Columbus. I mean, Ottawa and LA should be wins, but Dallas, Anaheim, Vegas, Colorado, San Jose, Calgary. Like, those are a lot of teams fighting, or at least above them. So they'd have to almost go and win, what, 7 of those games? 8 of those games?
It's over.
Yeah, right? I mean, but the thing that irks me is that, so they're losing, I believe it was last week's game to the Devils, and McDavid gets 100 points, and everyone seems to make a huge deal about McDavid getting 100 points. And yeah, great, he got 100 points. Where is his team in the standings? At this point, I expect Connor McDavid to get 100 points a season. He should be getting 100 points of the season. If he's one of the best players in the league, he should be. Like, that's not a surprise to me. That's not a newsworthy thing. That's not something I need to be all over the hockey Reddit and all over Twitter and everything. I expect him to get 100 points. Where is his team? What has that 100 points done to help his team get anywhere close to the playoffs?
Well, it has helped them get to a minus 33 goal differential.
Right.
Which seems bad for a team that is ostensibly still trying to make it right now. A losing record at home, a .500 record on the road, if you're being generous and you don't count overtime losses, and essentially like a pretty good run recently that ran into a brick wall. So I mean, they're a weird team in that they have two superstars on the team.
Yeah.
But it doesn't do it.
They're such an incomplete team. It just bothers me that's a really poorly built team. Well, but it just bothers me that that's the through line, like, of all that stuff. They're losing to the Devils, a team the Flames beat the night before 9-4. They get them on a back-to-back, and they lose to them? Like,
yeah.
Like, holy cow. And you're the desperate hockey team in that picture. Like, that's just, if that wasn't the death blow, then, as we said, Sunday probably for sure was.
You can't lose a couple in a row now. And they're, but they really just aren't. I don't know why some people were even thinking they had a shot. Like, they're really far behind.
Yeah, they had a lot of teams to climb over, and a lot of teams that are playing each other and getting three-point games every other night and all that kind of stuff. Like, it's too insurmountable.
Chicago the other day, Craig Button on TSN was saying, "Well, I'm not going to sleep on Chicago." I was like, Chicago. Chicago's done too. Chicago's 2 points out of the Oilers.
I saw a stat saying Chicago has scored the most goals and has the best power play since the new year. They've also let in the most goals and have the worst penalty kill since the new year. So,
no. Well, they did get Corey Crawford back. So that, yeah. I mean, that was part of his point, is he was saying that now that they've got Corey Crawford back, I guess maybe you're not letting in the most goals anymore.
Right.
And they've got so much skill, like DeBrincat coming through, and surprisingly to me, Perlini and Strom are, Perlini was second star of the week this week.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think those teams are just done. The Oilers, hopefully for their sake and their fans' sake, the people that are somehow still running that team, I hope they realized that it's done. Like, I hope that this whole time they haven't been sort of thinking, oh, maybe we actually do have a pretty good team, and that they are working on deals, they are working on strategies to get out of this somehow.
Or they're falling into the falsehood that Keith Gretzky should be their permanent GM. Because if they think that's a possible solution, then as an Oilers fan, I would be absolutely terrified.
I saw one person said it perfectly, I thought. It was on Twitter, and they just said, is there any other GM position in the league that Keith Gretzky would be the front runner for?
No.
No. I don't think so. It seems an easy question to answer from the outside, even. Like, there's no... When have you ever heard a rumor of somebody trying to, like, pluck Keith Gretzky out of the Oilers organization to
or
give
when
them,
he was with Boston, right?
To give them a team. Like, some of these guys, the names that are being kicked around, like Hunter and, like, Fuda, and, like, some of these guys have been for years, or Hextall actually was a GM.
Yeah.
No, I've never heard anybody suggest that Keith Gretzky would be the guy, and then they come out and the media comes out and says, well, this isn't nepotism, or it's not the old boys club, and it's like it's so obviously is.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, it's probably not that much his fault, but you got to wonder, like, if you were part of that organization, if you're Bob Nicholson, did Keith Gretzky ever come to you when they're looking at making a trade for, like, Brandon Manning and say, we shouldn't be doing this?
Like, I'm worried about this.
Like, Brandon Manning is being sat in the AHL.
Yeah.
Like, he injured Connor McDavid, and they actually traded assets for Brandon Manning, including, was that the one that they traded Cajula for? So they traded a useful player who was a popular player plus a draft pick for Brandon Manning, and now they have that guy sitting in the AHL,
which is insane. Like it's just crazy.
I mean, was Keith Gretzky up in arms? Was he saying, this is a terrible idea, we shouldn't do this, and that's why they picked him? That would be an interesting story. I would love to hear that.
That would be a good barometer to tell you if he should be your guy moving forward, honestly, because you can see the dividends of what that trade has done already.
Yeah, and it's weakened them further, which is completely unacceptable for a team that needs positive change. Like, it's even if it's small steps, they need consistent positive change, and they are not getting that, and they are not doing anything about it.
No. Okay, well, moving off that team and onto a team that shouldn't be concerned about playoffs, but maybe is concerned. The Toronto Maple Leafs had a really rough week last week. They let in 23 goals in 4 games, and this is how it broke down. They had a 6-2 loss to Tampa. All right. I saw the highlights from that game. Tampa got a lot of weird deflection goals and stuff. But still, that's 6 goals. A 5-4 loss to Chicago, a game they trailed 5-0 in and almost came all the way back. A 7-6 win against Philly, a game they would not have won unless Brian Elliott didn't go full Elliott in the third period. And a 6-2 loss to Ottawa.
Ugh.
To Ottawa. Like, that's shocking. That's not good.
Yeah, I mean, didn't that kind of seem to you like the end of the possibility of them getting home ice?
Oh, totally.
Right? Like, it's going to be tough for them to catch Boston.
Yeah, I completely agree. Although Boston had a bit of a rough week, too, after their crazy awesome point streak was ended. But, I mean, are you concerned about the Leafs? I mean, we talked about them last week, and I kind of voiced my concern about how I thought they might be, you know, in trouble against Boston in the playoffs, and this is not a good time to be losing games by a lot of goals or letting a lot of goals in. On top of the fact they're doing, outside of Tampa, they're doing it to a lot of weaker opponents, which is not good either. The Ottawa one is shocking.
I know. The Ottawa one makes you just wonder, like, have the distractions of being in Toronto become too much? Mike Babcock, it seems, wears on guys.
Totally.
Are they maybe not responding to what he wants? I don't know. So that's another one that Craig Button was commenting on, and he thinks that the Toronto Maple Leafs because they play such a high pressure system,
they
render themselves vulnerable to being dismantled by skilled teams. So it's one thing. I mean, like, I guess they lost to Ottawa, but I think that's probably a one-off. They would beat Ottawa most of the time.
Yeah, in a seven-game series, they would beat Ottawa, no doubt.
But a team like Chicago or a team like Tampa, if you're going to go full pressure and they have so many skilled players who can move the puck before you can get there, essentially what he was arguing is that it's a system that they don't have the personnel to do, and their opponents are, like, especially suited to defeat. So I don't know. I think that's an interesting take. I mean, you got to take all this. Like, I mean, they have a plus 43 goal differential. They're fifth in the league. So right. It's,
oh yeah.
I mean, it could just be a bad spot.
Like, whereas the Flames bad spot was 2 weeks ago and they were losing close ish games to good teams fighting for playoff spots. That's where I kind of draw the differences between even those two bad spots. This is letting in a lot of goals against, for the most part, weaker opponents, which is not good.
Well, and...
And in home games, too.
Yeah. I mean, the other frustrating thing is Freddie Anderson comes here, plays unbelievably well.
Right.
And then...
Yeah, good point.
Then he goes on this awful run. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think that there's a lot of... nervousness about playing Boston, and for good reason. And this does not, like, this looks like a dreadful matchup. And it is like having this huge defensive bottom coming out.
Yeah,
is just a horrible time to happen. So I mean, it could be worse. It could be happening 3 games before the playoffs start. I mean,
true. Yep. They still have time to kind of last 10 or so games here to just get things back to normalcy, hopefully.
Yeah,
I guess we'll see.
I guess what they're probably looking at is they're scoring some goals at least, like, from time to time. And if they can tighten it up, but they're a top heavy team.
Yeah,
like, or they're a forward heavy team.
Yep.
And if Freddie Anderson isn't a star goalie for you, and I mean, you mentioned this last week that he does have his
cold. This feels like a damn cold spell.
So I don't know. It's worrying. They've got so much skill that I think if they weren't headed towards Boston, I think it would be a lot easier to be like, they'll light up Montreal or something. That's going to be a tough one. I'd be worried.
Funny you mentioned Montreal. So Montreal is 3-5, in the month of March so far, and they're 3 points now out of a playoff spot. Starting to get a little bit worried. I mean, they still have the best goalie in the world to help them bail them out of games, but the results have not been in their favor lately, and they're starting to get in that awkward position where, well, obviously now it takes them 2 wins to get back into the playoffs.
Yeah, even that at this time of the year, 4 points... that's tough to overcome because it seems like almost every game is an overtime game.
Yeah.
There's just so many extra points getting knocked out there that it's really tough to catch teams. So unless they have a couple of head-to-heads, I mean,
might be a saving grace. Yeah, sorry, I didn't look at their schedule, but you're right. That might be their saving grace. I mean...
I'd be worried there too. Although, I mean, I think it's less of a concern there. Like, everybody wants the team to make the playoffs, but I think a lot of people... didn't think they would.
No. So then if they don't make the playoffs, I mean, you still consider it a successful season for them considering they expected to be near the bottom.
Yeah, for sure.
So that's good. And I guess the best part about them is they have a lot of good prospects moving forward. So this isn't like a final version of a team that needs to get in. This is the start, hopefully, of something they're kind of morphing into, right? So, I mean...
With the exception of... Shea Weber and Carey Price are now in their 30s.
Right. Good point.
Okay. So they do actually have some head-to-heads here. So they've got Carolina
on that's a huge one.
The 24th. They've got Columbus on the 28th.
Wow. Didn't write that better.
Yeah. So, I mean...
You win both those games.
But that's it, right? Like, after that. And then, I mean, the rest of their schedule is ugly. I mean, you got Toronto at the end of the year, Washington.
Whew.
Winnipeg.
Yeesh. Ooh, wow.
Florida, who's playing pretty good right now.
Yeah, they're playing better hockey for sure.
Buffalo and the Islanders and okay. Philly. So, I mean, it's a bit of a mixed bag there. Yeah, but
that's definitely a tougher schedule, though, I would
but
say.
But at least overall. You do have the games you can – I mean, if you can win in regulation against Carolina or something, I mean, then you're 2 points. So,
yeah,
who knows?
I would just say to Montreal fans, don't panic if you don't make it this year. There's good things coming, and at least this year you've shown good signs.
Yeah, and I mean you have Kotkaniemi,
right?
Who right now, I mean, he's a good player, but you expect him to be your first line center.
Yeah.
In the future. So, I mean, instead of having Philippe Deneau, who I think is a pretty good player,
right.
You conceivably have a star player now as your top center. So they've got a lot of the other pieces, and like you said, they've got some good players coming up. So the future long term for them, I think, is probably pretty promising. It's going to be tough for them to get in this year, though.
All right, moving into the third period tonight. So it's a bit of a toughy subject in the NHL, and that's the subject of reffing. It is so easy as fans to take your frustrations out on poor reffing in any sport, really. I mean, there's the absolutely egregious missed calls, like the New Orleans Saints.
Yeah, that one will be famous forever.
Forever. And then there's just smaller stuff kind of sprinkled in here and there. There was an excellent article written by Ian McIntyre on sportsnet.ca, and he talked about this play that happened on Sunday, which was that Elias Pettersson of the Canucks got a penalty shot against Anton Hudobin of the Dallas Stars, and Hudobin more or less threw his stick at Pettersson to stop his chance. And it's very clearly stated in the rule book that if that happens, the player gets awarded the goal. But he was not awarded the goal on the ice, and Vancouver Canucks head coach Travis Green didn't get a real explanation as to why it wasn't called a goal on the ice. Like, the ref couldn't really tell him why. And then on Monday it came out, and I think you pointed out on Twitter, and sorry, what did the NHL end up saying about the play?
The gist of it was that they felt that it was like a legitimate poke check attempt, and that he wasn't trying to throw his stick, that he lost his stick just in the attempt.
Now, this is weird because there's a lot of black and white in the NHL in terms of things, especially things involving your stick. A player trips another player, a player high sticks another player, and sometimes it's completely accidental. You guys could be getting up from the corner, your stick's accidentally on the guy's skates, you trip them, that's going to be a penalty. You have to be in charge of your stick the whole time. So I don't really understand how this is a gray area thing. Like, this should be black and white. The goalie, even if he was attempting the poke check, he still completely lost control of his stick. So he was not in control. So that means he broke the rules, right? That's the way I see it. Is that not the way you see it?
Well, first off, my thoughts on this begin with the penalty itself.
Yeah.
That led to the penalty shot, which was amazing.
See, I didn't see that.
It's John Klingberg is like, he has that moment where he just realizes that Pettersson's beat him.
Okay.
And he knows he's going to get a penalty, and he just mugs him. Like
he clear
fully,
is,
he fully yeah, like wraps his arms around him.
100%
penalty. Like, he is not letting him even get the attempt because he knows. Yeah. And I just loved it. Like, yeah, I just thought it was so funny that he was smart enough to realize that it was over. Like, he wasn't going to be able to pretend he was just back checking or something, and he just took him out. No, I agree 100%. I don't see, like, I don't even see why the NHL would try to get into figuring out whether people purposely threw the stick or not.
No, it should be, that's a black and white call.
Like, maybe if it was in the middle of a play. So this, it's unique anyways because it's an automatic goal. It's one of those few
right.
situations.
Yeah.
But, like, maybe if it was in the middle of a play and they didn't call a penalty and then they gave that explanation and they were like, oh, like, it, 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 he nudged somebody else and lost control of his stick or something. Right. But there's no one else on the ice.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no, like, for a goalie, there's no other situation where you are more responsible for everything you do. There's nothing else, like, there's nothing, nobody screening you.
Yep.
There's nobody putting pressure on you. Like, it is just you and the player. So even if you didn't mean to do it, you still did it. It doesn't make a difference because it's like a play that shouldn't happen.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's absurd.
Well, okay, so let's break down the significance of this blown call. So it's a 2-0 game. It remains a 2-0 game. Dallas is able to come back, tie the game 2-2, send it to overtime. They still lose in overtime.
Yeah. Now important point, though.
Now it's a 3-point game, right? Yep. It's an important point. It's a mildly important point for Dallas, but it's an even more important point to give away to the teams chasing them.
Yeah, Colorado couldn't have been happy.
Exactly. Yeah. Arizona being another wild card team. Minnesota, again, another team in their division. So you just see the ramifications of a poor call kind of reflect on the other teams, right? It's not just that game it reflects.
Yeah.
And...
yeah, 3-0's tough to come back from.
Right? Yeah. I mean, the thing that bugs me about this is that I feel... and I'm trying not to be too critical, but I feel like the reffing in the NHL has been very wishy-washy this year, sometimes subpar. I remember the game we talked about last week, the Vegas game in Vegas, Flames and Golden Knights, with the goal that was called back. I mean, that's not up for debate anymore, but there was a lot of talk after the game, and especially by head coach Bill Peters, who... very rarely, like, he knows not to say things about because he doesn't want to get in trouble, but he did make a good point that there was a few calls early, and then in the last 10 minutes of the game the whistles went away. And I mean, this is still the regular season. I understand they have this different standard in the playoffs where they let more stuff go or what have you, but if we're already having a wishy-washy standard in the regular season, imagine what it's going to be like come playoff time. And that's concerning for teams.
Well, you hope that it will be better in the playoffs because they choose the refs. Like, they eliminate the refs who, like, not everybody gets to go. So, I mean, I think that's, like, one reason for hope is that maybe they're, like, I'm sure they keep pretty close track of how the refs are actually doing. Yeah, I mean, it's annoying when the standards change a lot within a game. My biggest problem, though, is refs that think it's their job to keep the game close.
Right.
That's what I hate more than anything.
Right.
Because it's just like, because then it's not even that the standard changed for everybody. It's like the standard changed
within that game.
Yeah, to artificially create tension. It's almost like WWE or something. Like, they're...
right.
They got their thumb on the scale trying to make the game close, and I hate it. I hate it more than anything. Like, when I coach, it drives me absolutely insane because you're so frustrated because your team is doing everything they can, and then all of a sudden it's not just your team versus the other team. It's your team against this idea that a comeback is exciting.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a fair example. Like, I mean... a good one is the even up calls, right?
Yeah.
Like, and those things do exist.
Oh, for sure.
I always get
nervous.
You
know it's coming.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You always get nervous as a team if you get 3 or 4 straight power plays. You know they're looking for the smallest thing for your team to do to call a penalty against you, right? Like, and that's their idea of, like you said, creating this artificial tension, I guess.
I think it's human nature, too, in that... like, I can see myself if I would never be a ref, but if I were...
I would not want the responsibility.
Yeah, it's and, like, I mean, I think right at the front, just got to say, I mean, that's a hard job.
Oh, yeah.
But I think there's a little bit of human nature there that if you do give one team 3 penalties, you do kind of start looking to see if the other team does anything because you don't want it to get so out of hand, like, so uneven that maybe you just are missing something on the other team, so... yeah, I don't know. It's been frustrating. I actually am getting less frustrated with the reffing as it goes than I was at the start of the year when there was like Johnny was getting hit from behind all the time and they were just letting star players get like attacked.
But funny enough, I'm trying to remember this situation, and maybe you can re-jog my memory. There was a game this year where we had control of the puck, and remember they blew it dead, and we were about to shoot it into the empty net. And then there wasn't really an explanation as to why they blew the play dead.
Oh, yeah.
That was earlier in the season. Like I vaguely remember that. But there've been like a lot of these weird things, and it's interesting that the NHL came out today to kind of try and defend the situation a little bit.
Yeah.
But I honestly think you just have to hold them up to a higher standard. Like on calls that are more black and white than others, and we already went into the gray area stuff last week. It's not that kind of thing. It's not that, oh, we think it should be this way or whatever. It's like, that's the way it's written in the rule book, man. Like,
yeah, that one was great. Well, did you see the other one?
Which one?
From the same game? So Khudobin earlier in the game, he's pushing off the post, like going side to side, and his skate blade comes out of the skate. So he's
out of his own skate. So there's a blade on the ice then, technically.
Yeah, I think there's a blade on the ice, or it's like hanging sideways on his skate or something. Okay, like he can't stand on it. And he is like slamming a stick on the ice, trying to get the attention of the ref to let them know that he's having an equipment problem.
Yeah.
And eventually he just turns and pushes the net off. And he doesn't get a penalty. Like he didn't get an unsportsmanlike penalty or a delay of game. And like, which made me think about it a little bit, because what do you expect? Like, I kind of think that the goalie should have to just skate to the bench. Like, that's what happens to a player. Like, yeah. I mean, it's not his helmet. Like, it's not a...
Yeah, he can still technically make saves.
Yeah.
He just can't really stand.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know. But, yeah, so they had that play, too. Like, he just turned around, pushed the net off, just blew the game down. And, yeah, he didn't get a penalty for that. And then he didn't get a penalty for throwing the stick in the penalty shot, either.
Interesting that you mentioned the posts issue, because that's an issue that's come up in the last week.
Right.
Because of what happened in the Chicago-Toronto game, which was that the goalie...
Oh, he knocked it off.
He totally knocked it off. But then there's other video examples of the way the goalies kind of work the post now. They use the posts as leverage to help them push off, right? So it does happen on accident, too. Do you think that's something that eventually becomes a more looked-at penalty and or a challengeable play, potentially?
Yeah, I don't know. I'd like to see it. I think the only way that you can deal with it is by penalizing the team. Like, even if the guy doesn't really want to, there's no other way to do it. Because if you try to make it harder to knock the pegs off, now you're creating a safety risk for the players
100%.
Who get hit into it.
Yeah, because you still see guys go crashing in.
Yeah,
the net,
I mean, those,
right?
Those things, they used to just have metal rods.
Yeah.
Keeping that, like,
and no give.
Incredibly dangerous. Yeah. So you can't do that. And if goalies are going to, like, try to play a style where they're taking it, like they're using the posts. I think that you, like, I think there basically has to be a rule that, or they have to start enforcing that rule, that unsportsmanlike, in that, like, it ruins the game. I mean, it
totally
drives me crazy.
Yeah.
I thought, like, I wouldn't mind seeing a challenge for that, to be honest. Goalie knocks the net off. Like, I think he knocked the net off on purpose. There was no reason for him to be doing that.
To do what he did.
Yeah.
Totally. 100%.
Like, it was a natural enough looking movement.
Yeah.
But it didn't match the play.
No. That's correct. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And, worked out pretty well. I mean, shut down the play. They were getting dominated in their own end. They'd given up a bunch of goals. Like, a
couple seconds left in
the
game.
I hated that. I think that's a cheap play.
Yep, and I agree. John Tavares was the one to kind of come out and say something about it, and we'll see. I bet you it becomes an issue because it has been brought up a lot in the last week or so. So,
yeah, and it's one of those things too that if goalies are constantly knocking it off because that's the new style, that's ripe for abuse.
So I guess the bottom line here is the refs are cool and goalies are the problem.
Yeah, it's usually goalies that are the problem.
All right, we're back here for overtime. And so Joel Quenneville has said that he would like to come back and coach, which shouldn't be a shock to anyone. Figured it would happen, but he probably just wanted to kind of take the year to recoup and
enjoy his $6 million.
Yeah, exactly. but it'll be interesting now because obviously teams are going to line up to try and get him in the offseason, I would assume. He's one of the best coaches available, maybe kind of all time, really.
Right.
Yeah. So I wanted
since Babcock anyway.
Yeah. So I wanted to ask you, what are three teams you think reasonably that he could go to? Maybe toss out one. I'll toss one back.
Yeah, sure. Okay, so I think that Dallas would actually be an interesting team for him to go to.
Interesting.
I think Dallas is a team that is not, like, they're not early on in a rebuild. They're sort of on their way, and they're in the playoff mix. There's a good chance they're going to make the playoffs this year. They have strong goaltending. They have, some top-line players that are the envy of a lot of teams. And that's a team that, they have Jim Montgomery right now.
Right.
A relatively inexperienced guy, but I think that is a switch that you can make, like, especially if they have a quick first round loss.
Yeah.
I think that's a switch that you can make that your fans are going to accept.
I would wonder too if, like, Jim Montgomery, they could keep him on as an assistant or something like that. You know, just bump him down type thing. That's not a bad pick. I would start off with Philly. He was rumored to have gone there earlier in the season. That one just totally makes sense to me. The only thing, I mean, I don't think Carter Hart will be their starter next year. I don't think he's ready to take on that responsibility. But they have a good team, and with a decent offseason of kind of unloading some pieces that just don't fit there anymore and recouping a little bit more in terms of talent or free agents or whatever, I think Philly could have a decent year next year, and he could fit in really nicely with that organization.
I think that's a very good pick. I think Philly's probably the most likely team that he goes to. They're also, it's a little different since Snyder passed, but they're also, like, a real aggressive team. They do exciting, spectacular moves.
Totally.
So, my next team would be the Florida Panthers.
Ah, you took one of mine.
Oh, did I? Oh, that's... Yeah, so, I mean, that's a team that I think, talent-wise, at the end of the year, like last year, they went on a crazy run, just barely missed.
They're kind of doing it again right now.
Yeah, this year they're having a big push again, and I think... I mean, who knows? They may be able to do the Bobrovsky-Panarin thing.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well.
But if you can't do that, and you're looking at your team saying, we should be good enough to get a wild card spot or something, I think you can look at coaching and say, listen, Bob Bugner's done a fine job in a lot of ways, but
we could get a
guy who is three-time cup winner.
It feels like they're underachieving massively right now with the talent they have on that team. It feels like they should be a heck of a lot better than they are. My other connection on that one too would be Dale Tallon, right?
Oh, right. Yeah.
Hired him in Chicago and stuff like that. So I got to think that connection probably plays a little bit favorably for that sort of hire. So since you took that one from me, I was going to say the Colorado Avalanche. Again, kind of a similar situation. They are well lined up in terms of the talent they have on both forward and D. And he has connections there, previously coaching. I don't think he was never a head coach there, was he? He was assistant coach for sure. Yeah, maybe he was a head coach for a while too, before he went to St. Louis.
I think he was, actually.
Yeah. So there you go. So, I mean, that would have been a long time ago. So not many connections probably left from days he was there. But still, I think that would be a pretty favorable spot for him to go.
Ooh, yeah, I think that would be... That would be a good one for him, because that's another team. I think they're a little bit similar to Dallas that way. It's like they're not super, super young.
No. And they have the talent stacked in the right direction for sure. It'll be interesting to see what Colorado does in the offseason with Varlamov, if they re-sign him or if they try and find a different goalie or whatever. Because they have Grubauer for the next 2 years, I noticed, under contract. So they have a lot of decisions to make for sure, but you get a guy like Quenvalin, and that helps make some pretty important decisions moving forward about kind of going for it in the next couple of years for sure.
I wonder about potentially LA.
Interesting.
So LA, I mean, they're at the bottom of the league right
bottom,
now.
Bottom.
But they do have veterans. Like they've got top end. Well, I don't know. I mean, they do. They have some, like, if you get Kopitar playing really well again.
Yep.
You got Drew Doughty there.
Yep.
You got Ilya Kovalchuk. I mean, who could have seen a weak season coming from him, coming back from the KHL?
They need to jettison that Dustin Brown contract, though. There's still like two or three more years on that thing. Like, that is the worst contract ever.
And they escaped some bad contracts, too. Like, they got out of the Richards one somehow. Yeah, so that's a team that I wonder... I question the competence of the GM there. Like, I don't know
Rob Blake. Yeah.
I just when they make moves, I don't get it. I don't see
where the benefit is.
Yeah, like, it doesn't, I don't see what they're trying to build. I think they're in a tough spot in that you have some players that are in the prime of their career and you don't want to waste the seasons.
I agree.
But I mean, it was a spectacular failure this year.
Yeah, completely. No, that was one I would half consider as well. I just wonder if he looks at the situation and says, it's too far gone. They need to do too much to, but maybe they do. Maybe they start the off season that way and they just jettison a bunch of stuff and are able to make it an attractive place for him to come.
No.
But let's agree on one thing for sure. I don't think there's any way he's going anywhere near the Oilers.
Or the Senators.
All right. Well, that's it from us from The Point. As always, please follow us on Twitter at FromThePoint1 and subscribe to us on iTunes and Podcast Addict. Are we up at the other places yet there, Jim?
We're not. So stick to what you love.
from The Point, I'm Andy Sashi.
And I'm Jim Malloy.
We'll talk to you again next week.